The National Broadcasting Company now takes you to London.
This is London. The sudden Japanese air attack on Hawaii came as a complete surprise to most people in Britain. The first intimation that the general public had of the move was made about an hour and a half ago on the regular BBC news program. Now it's the topic of all conversation and a great deal of speculation. One well-informed quarter said to me tonight, an attack on Burma or the Dutch East Indies wouldn't have surprised us at all, but the straight, bold-headed way the Japanese acted against Hawaii was completely unexpected. In view of Mr. Churchill's recent statement that Britain would follow America within the hour if she became embroiled with Japan, the general feeling here tonight is that the British government will lose no time in making its stand plain. No official statement has yet been issued, and official quarters are waiting eagerly for further information. Some well-informed quarters in London tonight explained that an official British declaration of war would probably have to wait for a clarification of the official American attitude, and noted that officially, the United States can't declare war until Congress meets. But nobody here supposes there will be any hitch or delay in British action. The men in the street presume that measures have already been coordinated between the British and American Navy chiefs for the defense of the Pacific. And although the Admiralty is keeping mum, most people believe that the British Navy has already decided what part it will play in this new action in the Pacific. We return you now to New York.
We take you now to San Francisco.
We've got NBC's expert on the Far East up and close.
Hello, fellow Americans. The most fantastic thing that has yet happened in this fantastic world is the bombing of Honolulu and the bombing of Manila and the sinking of several ships off this coast. We don't know yet what's behind this. There's more behind it than meets the eye. So far, the reports that have been coming in have been entirely based on military sources and military understanding and military computation. I think I have just received the most interesting and perhaps the most important sidelight on what has happened. I remember very well the Manchurian incident of 1931, when the Japanese army overnight sprang upon the Chinese army and seized Manchuria. The next day, I was in touch with the Foreign Office in Tokyo. I discovered that it was a complete surprise to the Tokyo Foreign Office. And that government in Tokyo, if it had been properly pressured by America and England, would have repudiated that attack and declared it a mutiny. I have just been in touch with the San Francisco Japanese Consulate General. The consul, Mr. Yoshio Muto, was not able to talk, but his representative and secretary, Mr. K. Inagaki, spoke to me from the home of Mr. Muto. He said that the attack is a complete surprise to the foreign officer, the consul general here in San Francisco, that the San Francisco Japanese consulate general knew about it was hearing it over our radio, and he implied that it is likewise a complete surprise to the foreign office in Tokyo and the Japanese government in Tokyo. Now, that may prove to be true. It is very possible that there is a double cross in this business. I suppose that if the attack on Honolulu had been made in such force as to destroy the American naval base there, we might believe that the Japanese government was behind it as a matter of policy. But you notice that the news gives us every assurance that it is far from destroyed, and that the only thing left there now as a result of the first attack are a few parachute troops wandering around on the sand somewhere on the north end of Wahoo Island. They will soon be pulled in the bag, and we'll find out who sent them. It is possible, my friend, that this is a coup engineered by German influences and with the aid of German vessels in the Pacific. Again, it is possible that this is a coup engineered by a small portion of the Japanese Navy that has gone fanatic and decided to precipitate war. And still again, it is possible that this is a coup engineered by the group in Japan that wants war kicked out of office. And that when the thing is brought home to the Tokyo government now, it might be possible for the Tokyo government to repudiate the action, call upon the nation to repair the injury to America by agreeing to American terms and precipitating a complete revolution in the government of Tokyo. All of these things are possible. You will have to wait and see what happens. Now, I would be glad to go out and talk as long as they wish me to take the time on various phases of this situation. It seems to me that if the coup is precipitated by those fanatics who have wanted America at war with Japan and vice versa, it might have been done as an answer to the message of the answer of Secretary Cardell Hull to the envoy Peruta and Nomura. You notice we are told that Mr. Hull burst out in true Tennessee language and told the Japanese that their reply was crowded with infamous falsehoods and distortions. I have been in many a Japanese ball, I am sorry to say, and I have seen many an argument with Japanese that would have ended just an argument, suddenly burst into violence because something was said by one of the so-called white people in the brawl that suddenly lashed across the Japanese face. Now, it is possible that the Japanese completely lost faith and descended to the status of being willing to engage in a violent brawl as a result of this answer, although it might be that this answer and Secretary Hull's message came at the same time. But it sounds like one of those Japanese arguments that suddenly descends into violence. We cannot be sure yet that the Tokyo government is behind it. As to the president's address to the Mikado Saturday News, which we just learned about through Mr. Balkis in Washington, certainly it was a very sweet and a very humble message. And it reminded Japan of the way in which America stood by Japan 100 years ago when Japan was coming out of medievalism and becoming a modern power. And if America had not mothered Japan at that time, Japan would have been destroyed by the empire-building nations of Europe who were attacking Japan at that time. Today, we are mothering China in the course of her changeover from medievalism to modernism. This message, if it reaches the Japanese people, will have a very interesting and valuable influence in Japan. Thank you for now.
From San Francisco, we have presented NBC's expert on the Far East up and close. The National Broadcasting Company takes you now to Honolulu.
We've got to try to make sense out of something that just doesn't make sense. And yet, if we look at it perhaps from the standpoint of old Oriental hands that have been working with this sort of thing for a long time, we can begin to see some things that might make sense. As I've said before, if the attack on Honolulu is not a sufficient force to really cripple that great naval base, but merely sufficient to anger the Americans and make them decide to destroy Japan, then it doesn't make sense from the standpoint of Japan, unless it's going to be used by some faction in Japan to try to kick the fanatic army and navy crowd out of power in Japan and reverse Japan's policy and bring her over to the Anglo-Saxon side and take her away from the German side. Now, of course, we might suspect that the Chinese would have engineered a policy like this to get the war on between China and Japan if they had anything to engineer it with, but they haven't. That's out. As I have said before, it might be the Germans. You have to look for that angle. There have been German raiders in the Pacific the last few weeks. There have been several vessels sunk by German ships, apparently. It might be one of the factions in Japan itself. So far, all we can learn from Honolulu is that the actual bombing has stopped, although the air beam seems to be still out. But we've been on the telephone to Honolulu, and they say that the actual shooting seems to have stopped for now. We can't get any word about much damage except some explosions of great magnitude, some fuel tanks that have been blown up. There's one report that two ships were sunk in the harbor, and there's this report about parachute troops being to land and wandering about the beach somewhere. We'll learn a lot more when maybe some aviators are shot down who are still able to talk, or some parachute troops gathered in, and our men can ask some questions. We have as yet, here comes a bulletin. The War Department has invoked the Espionage Act against the publication of military information regarded as secret. We all know that, and we can't any longer state anything about Army strength outside the continental limits of the United States. As to watch over the Japanese community, it's interesting that we learn that on the Atlantic coast in New York and in Norfolk, special watch, police watch has been put over the Japanese. There are very few Japanese there to watch. Here on the Pacific coast, where there are more Japanese than anywhere else, and so far we have no word whatever of anything untoward having happened, I think we can take the word of the local San Francisco Consulate General that the Japanese community has been totally surprised by this action. And so far, there is no indication here whatsoever that any sabotage has broken out or that any Japanese spies or saboteurs were warned in time to go into action. Of course, the people around Little Tokyo and Los Angeles are on the TV. So far, I think they've conducted themselves very well, as far as we can learn by the dispatches. That the sheriff has sort of taken charge there, Little Tokyo, and has gathered up a number of volunteers, and they have set up a volunteer watching post, and they're watching the Japanese, but they haven't had any reason to do anything. And people on both sides of the fence there are remaining calm and decent, which is certainly good news. We are waiting for confirmation about the reports of sinking of the ship in the Pacific. Now, they say that could be too be done by Germans, perhaps, as well as by Japanese. We shall have to see what happens. Of course, the general comment here on the street is that if the Japanese really did this a purpose, they are pretty foolish. And yet, if they did it on purpose, they have certainly got guts. That's the way the American people on this coast are taking it. We'll wait to see what happens now, and particularly watch for a declaration from Mr. Nomura in Washington. Thank you. Oh, I'm to go on a little while longer. I'm sorry, I got the signals wrong. All right, there's plenty of material here in front of us. Police Department poured reserves into the district. It's in Los Angeles, a little Tokyo. But as I have told you, there are no disorders reported from there yet. If this is a purposeful attack on the part of the Japanese, intended by the government, we're in for an exceedingly bitter war in the Pacific. A war in which all the bitterness of racial hostility will come out. Because the average American will resent to the very marrow having been attacked this way, unawares when his own government was talking in the friendliest fashion with the emissaries of the Tokyo government. But as I say, I wouldn't accept that, please. It's very possible this is something engineered over the head of the Tokyo government, and we'll be hearing from the Tokyo government before very long. It is to be noted that there has been no declaration of war from Tokyo or from our side. And, of course, we can't issue a declaration of war until Congress assembles. But still, there's been no statement as yet that a declaration will be asked for. A good deal of speculation is going on as to what we'll do with Mr. Caruso and Mr. Nomura. Well, of course, we want to hear from them first. And if Japan has used them as a blind to cover while she started shooting us, there'll be a lot of feeling that we ought to put them in jail. On the other hand, we have our ambassador and his helpers in Tokyo, and we have to get them out, and they'll have to be exchanged on a hostage basis. But I'm not at all sure, because Mr. Nomura and Caruso were not as surprised as the local San Francisco Consul General by what has happened this morning. Thank you, and more later.
From San Francisco, we've brought you NBC's NewsHour.
Outpost in the Pacific. Now, here's a report
that I've gathered from different reporters of the Honolulu Advertiser who've been out endeavoring to get information concerning the Japanese air attack on the island of Oahu in the Hawaiian Islands. The first information in Honolulu that claims that Japan were attacking the islands was about 8 o'clock this morning, Hawaiian time. The first group of Japanese airplanes attacked Fort Island at Pearl Harbor, the Navy's mighty fortress in the islands. Roy Batusik, a local attorney, was up in his private plane flying over Coco Head when he said one or two Japanese planes gave him a salute of machine gun bullets as they approached the city. The plane was slightly damaged, and Mr. Batusik made a landing. After machine gunning Fort Island, the first Japanese planes moved to Hickam Field. Observers said considerable damage was done to planes and to Hickam Field. There is great activity there now in clearing the field of debris. At Pearl Harbor, where is based the Pacific Fleet, three ships were attacked. The Oklahoma was set afire. All lines of communication seem to be down between the various Army posts and Navy aerodromes and Army airfields. There has been no statement made by the Navy. The Army has issued orders for all people, the civilian population, to remain off the streets. The first raiders carried torpedoes and did their damage to shipping in Pearl Harbor and off Honolulu. Everyone here on the islands were taken by surprise by the attack. Even yet, it's difficult for some people to believe that an air raid on these beautiful islands has actually happened and that lives have been lost. Several planes have been shot down, and anti-aircraft gunnery is very heavy. It is thought that the plane came from the south in the direction of the island of Kauai. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, Hickam Field, and Wheeler Field, several squadrons of Japanese planes came in from the south over Diamond Head, dropping bombs and incendiary bombs over the city. One bomb dropped in front of the governor's mansion at Washington Place and killed one man. Another dropped by the Honolulu Advertiser, nearly hitting several people and almost reaching its mark. At the Pacific Heights and Dowsett Highlands, beautiful residential districts, there was heavy bombing. One woman was killed in Dowsett Highlands. The governor has proclaimed a state of emergency. Traffic is almost at a standstill in parts of the city. However, the traffic to and from Waikiki seems to be normal. When Japanese planes appeared over Waikiki, there were many people out in the streets and watched the bombing there. One man at Waikiki was badly injured when a bomb dropped in the heart of that beach resort. The Japanese planes seem to have come over the city and the environs, but no intimation whatsoever that these were Japanese planes. And it was very difficult for people here to believe that these were Japanese planes. Here is a report that just came from systems from Hickam Field. There were 350 men killed in a direct bomb hit on the barracks at Hickam Field. And at Bellows Field, on the other side of the island, on the windward side of the island, the field was bombed very heavily. That's all the news from Honolulu now. We'll be back with more news at a later time. This is KGU in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Back in New York City, we'd like to read now a telegram. It reads and addressed to President Franklin D. Roosevelt, the White House, Washington, D.C. All our facilities and personnel are ready and at your instant service. We await your command. It's signed, David Sarnoff, President, Radio Corporation of America, and Chairman of the Board, National Broadcasting Company. And here is a message for NBC Associated Stations. The National Broadcasting Company newsroom in the Orient, New York, Hollywood, San Francisco, and Washington will remain on a 24-hour basis throughout this emergency. If news warrants, NBC will broadcast throughout the night. And now for another special broadcast, we take you to Washington.
Tonight,
Tonight at the White House, President Roosevelt will meet with his cabinet members to determine what course the administration should follow after the Japanese attack on the United States. Beyond doubt, he will ask Congress to make some declaration. What that will be, we do not know. But here in our Washington studios are several congressional leaders who can give us a cross-section of the feeling in Congress. They have been sitting at the speaker listening to Upton Close speaking in San Francisco and the commentator from Honolulu. They are the Senator from Utah, Senator Albert G. Thomas, Senator Walter F. George, Georgia, and Representative Luther H. Johnson of Texas. First voice that you will hear will be that of Senator Albert G. Thomas of Utah. Senator Thomas, just how would Congress go about declaring war on Japan if the President decides that a formal declaration should be made?
Japan with a declaration or a statement about the condition it would have to be that war has actually started because the attack upon Hawaii is an attack upon the incorporated part of the United States and it's definitely an invasion. I pass the previous word to spell an invasion. That means that the declaration of war would not be initiated by us, but a statement by Congress would be a result of the action already taken by Japan.
Well, Senator, do you think it would be a joint resolution?
It would be a resolution by the whole of Congress. Yes, on recommendation of the President.
Senator Walter F. George of Georgia, we would like to pose this question to you. Is there any doubt that Congress would pass a declaration in view of Japan's attack?
Assuming that the attack is by the Japanese government and all of the evidence makes an attack by mere factions of the Army or Navy inconsistent with the facts so far reported, there would, in my opinion, be no doubt of a speedy recognition of a state of war, which, in legal effect, would amount to a straight declaration of war by the United States against Japan.
Well, Senator, in view of the comments you've heard to broadcast and those that you have received in your office, no doubt, what is your opinion, your statement, if you would like to make one, of the situation that exists and what little we know about it?
It is unbelievable that Japan would have made an unprovoked attack. But all of this evidence is consistent with that fact. At the very moment when the State Department and the President were undertaking to continue a state of peace with Japan, the attack was made. The developments of the last 3 or 4 weeks, particularly, indicate that this movement by Japan has the authority of the Japanese government back of it. Assuming that to be true, although it's an unbelievable development in our international affairs, the United States does not hesitate to accept the state of war created by Japan and enter vigorously in its prosecution.
Representative Luther A. Johnson of Texas, he is in the group and the only representative of the House at the gathering here by microphone. Representative Johnson, are these your views or do you have opinions on the situation?
I think that Senator Thomas and Senator George have very clearly and accurately stated the views of a nation as a whole, and I think that Congress would undoubtedly carry into effect their statements they made with reference to the state of war. And I think that Japan's attitude and this this war is characteristic of Japan's method of waging war in recent years. The invasion of Manchuria and the invasion of these other countries appalled them without warning. And in doing that, they not only follow their technique of war, but they also are consistent with the league to which they belong, of which Adolf Hitler is the head. The American people, I will say, are united, and after the long, tolerant, patient efforts made by President Roosevelt to help me hold the first war, I think that if Japan now brings on this war, it will find the United States united and unified as never before.
I think that Johnson and Senators may interrupt our little discussion and roundtable. I'm going to return to the Embassy Museum in New York for just a moment.
Plants that have defense contracts or who are working on defense orders will at once institute proper measures against suicide. If you keep that message again from the NBC, a special message. The Secretary of War directs that all firms and manufacturing plants that have defense contracts or who are working on defense orders will at once institute proper measures against suicide. Another bulletin now for all Army men in the New York area. The 2nd Corps Army Area Headquarters here in New York has revoked all leaves and furloughs and ordered all men to report to their posts immediately. Again, New York. News of the Japanese attack on outlying U.S. possessions caused crowds to gather in Times Square today, and at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, the crowd was rapidly increasing. In newsreel theaters, programs were uninterrupted. Attachés in the Japanese consulate on Fifth Avenue worked feverishly, filing records into suitcases and began carting them away. A smell of burning paper indicated that some records had been destroyed. Washington. Sir Sizzlefeld, in his message yesterday to Emperor Hirohito or Hirohito of Japan, vainly attempting to avert a Far Eastern conflict, assured the Nipponese government that the United States had no intention of invading Indochina and expressed the view that America could obtain pledges from the Dutch East Indies, Malaya, Thailand, and China, and that no such attack would be made if Japanese troops were withdrawn from that area. This news has come to you from the NBC newsroom in New York, and this is a national broadcasting company.